Well, I'm back with Caitlin, and we can talk about Super Twitter. So Musk has reversed his position after a bad first day in court and exposure of a lot of text messages he didn't really like. He gave up and he agreed to buy Twitter at the original price, $54.20, and Twitter has agreed to this offer. And I listened to Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway, and they say it might be over by this weekend. In 2 or 3 days, Musk might own Twitter. So we're going to see what comes of it. He has said that he tweeted that his main interest is making a super app like they have in China. One app that people use for everything, instant messaging, payment, everything, which certainly if Twitter was somehow involved in payment, it might actually start to make money. So as business point of view, that seems like a good thing. And unless Musk has changed his mind again, which he does a lot, one of his first acts will be to put Trump back on Twitter. So that will have a dramatic effect on both the culture of Twitter and the election coming up in the United States. So anyway, there should be an exciting time coming up. We'll see. There's going to be a lot of staff leaving Twitter. There's probably going to be reorganization, maybe a new CEO. We'll find out how good Musk is going to be at taking a disastrous business and trying to turn it around to something worthwhile. From a financial point of view, of course. I mean, Twitter is very influential, but it doesn't make any money. He might be the one to fix that. Anyway, and Caitlin has got a bad motherboard.
Yeah, so ASRock, who develops motherboards, did something a little foolish. So PC World has an article written by Michael Kreider. And apparently what happened, and if you can see this picture here, ASRock put stickers over the RAM slots that show how to install the RAM. For people that never built a desktop before, you usually put in RAM in pairs so they can sort of parallelize the data flow, essentially. And the sticker tells you which things to put it in. And unfortunately, what happened is that they used the wrong glue, I'm going to say, for the sticker. And when people tried to take off the sticker from the RAM slot, it just tore and made a big mess. And these RAM slots have very tiny, like just little like pins inside. And the paper just got inside and it ruined all these motherboards. So when you bought this ASRock motherboard, it essentially came pre-broken, which was not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's convenient. That saves you the bother of breaking it yourself.
Yeah, it's broken for you, broken in.
Trouble installing RAM just out of general clumsiness. That's why I generally avoid hardware. I'm not much good at even the simplest task.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Anyway, so Dan Gooden is a famous security journalist, and he even took some of my classes. I've known him for years, and he went on Twitter with Bogdanovich to like a sting operation and investigative reporting, exposing the people trying to bribe him to write articles, which is a bold move and even pretty much unredacted. So these guys contacted him on Twitter and said, we'll pay you money to write articles about topics. And then he got them to contact him on Signal and email and went back and forth. This is a real company. And they claim that they pay journalists $2,000 to $5,000 per article to promote certain companies. And they claim they have 40 journalists that do this all the time at major publications like Wired. And you should just go along. Everybody does it. And Dan is, of course, refusing on ethical grounds. But they say, oh, we have an ethical solution for people that have ethics. We won't pay you the money. Instead, we'll pay for a bunch of Facebook ads to drive traffic to the site. So you'll get paid indirectly. So they may be exaggerating their effect, but it may be that tech journalism is that corrupt. I know there have been a lot of exposés about how fake Amazon reviews are and things like that. And Yelp reviews, people are just buy those and get paid. So, and I know a lot of talk radio, people are calling into talk radio and they are reading talking points written by professional writers. In fact, 15 years ago, I knew a author who couldn't get a real job. So even though he was a Democrat, he got a job writing right-wing talking points because they would pay for it. And he would then mail it to people who would then call the radio and read his talking points. Yeah. So it's a sort of sleazy business, but anyway, it's going on. And or it appears to be going on. And it's very interesting to see it revealed from a person directly involved. So anyway.
Clearly what's needed is ethics in tech journalism.
Yeah, and then the question is, how would you enforce these ethics in tech journalism? I mean, they'll pay you on the side, so your boss won't know. So actually, I don't know how you'd ever catch them. I guess you could have a clause in the contract that says, I'll fire you if you find out. And according to Dan, everybody would fire you if they found out. But since I think most journalists are gig work, how would you know if they're getting paid on the side for some other gig work, you know? Anyway, all right. And in the same spirit, Caitlin's got fake CISO profiles.
Yeah. So if you go onto LinkedIn, according to Krebs on Security, there are a bunch of fake CISO profiles on LinkedIn targeting Fortune 500 companies. And so this is very interesting because LinkedIn has become a social engineering hotspot where if you want to find people you're trying to get information from or get information from a company or something, you go onto LinkedIn. And what we're seeing is very obvious attacks, not just going after the lower level people at these large companies, but also people pretending to be CISOs from large companies, including like ExxonMobil, for example.
And I wonder how they use it.
The article is not entirely clear. These are largely new. Some of the profiles are better than others. Some of them were like, would have a picture of a woman and say, you know, I'm the owner of company XYZ. And then in the profile use like male pronouns and stuff like that. So some of them were definitely bottom of the barrel, but other ones, who knows?
Well, I can see how you would say, I have an exciting business opportunity for you. You need to invest with me. And I'm the CEO of Intel, so that will give us some weight.
That could have been it. It could have been as simple as a scam. And it also could be targeting companies. And I think that, you know, in general, LinkedIn is just one of those networks that it really attracts scammers and, you know, criminals based on, you know, its clout.
Well, I can see why, because in that article, they point out if you just Google the CEO of a major company, the fake one will be first. So yep. LinkedIn has real clout.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so there's a lawsuit trying to punish Walmart and CVS because they put homeopathic products mixed right in with the real products. And this is, the lawsuit alleges this accounts to endorsing a fake product, which it certainly is. I know the new king of Britain is big on homeopathic medicine too, and has been pushing homeopathic clinics throughout Britain. It is like the fake news and conspiracy theories. It's a bit of like anti-logic thing that's taking over the world, but they mix them right in so the consumers can't really tell. And the question is whether that legally counts as an endorsement of fake medicine. And first trial said no, but the next appeal said yes. So it's going to go on. But it sounds like a good idea to stamp out that practice. They really shouldn't be selling fake drugs next to the real drugs. That would improve things. Anyway, and finally, Caitlin's got dark data. So what is dark data?
So dark data is data stored in a data center that's not necessarily, you know, part of the main product. So you might have things like logs. And the conversation has an article talking about dark data and how it's related to a carbon footprint, which is very interesting because we all know that that computing takes power, right? If you compute, you know, 3 + 3, that takes a certain amount of electricity to get to an answer. And what this article is trying to say, and I'm not quite sure how this works, but apparently Tom Jackson and Ian R. Hodgkinson believe that the storage of data in and of itself impacts the carbon footprint of the data center, so much so that they were saying that if you generate 3 terabytes of dark data and kept that data for a year, That would have a similar carbon footprint to like flying six times from London to New York. And in fact, a lot of companies produce, the article says, 1,300,000,000 gigabytes of dark data per day. And so that equates to 3,023,255 flights, essentially. Now, I'm not quite sure how data in and of itself relates to a carbon footprint. Maybe it's just the making of the storage devices and the running of like hard drives, or I don't know. But apparently, yeah, it does. And if we could reduce the amount of data being stored, apparently we could greatly decrease the carbon footprint. And the carbon emissions from a lot of these tech hubs, tech centers, server centers, are substantial. They're using a lot of electricity.
Well, wait till this guy finds out about the blockchain. I mean, I'm highly skeptical that the data itself is costing that much. It does mean, of course, you have more hard drive spinning and stuff, but I think it's nothing compared to the processing.
Right. Like I said, I'm not quite sure how this works. But yeah, no, there is some talk that it does have a, substantial carbon footprint just from having the data.
Well, one thing about it is that is one form of waste that is not improved by Ethereum moving to proof of stake, I think, because you still have all these people, you still need all these extra copies of the blockchain. So the storage cost is not going down, but nobody ever even talks about that. They just talk about the processing cost. So
and for sure,
they've overlooked it, but the impression I have is that the processing cost is much higher.
Right. And I mean, I would imagine too that processing is much more expensive than data, but I guess when you're talking about lots of data, like terabytes per day that compound day after day, I guess, you do have to create the infrastructure to support that. And just like there's a carbon footprint when you buy an electric car, even if you charge it all with solar, because there's a manufacturing process installed, I imagine just having to store, several terabytes of data a day means you just have to buy so many hard drives that you're just making a carbon footprint from that alone. So,
well, it certainly is true that we create an incredible amount of data, but that's because it's so cheap. I saw a presentation from EMC, the storage manufacturer, and they said, if you send an email and you attach an image to it, there end up being 80 copies of that image. There's one in your inbox, there's one on the server, there's a backup on the server, there's a backup at the other end, and that's why data grows so fast.
Right.
And that's the only reason people write their software to make all those extra copies of everything is because storage is so cheap. They can afford to do that.
Right. And that was the idea behind oil too. Like why everything was running off oil for so long is because oil was so cheap. But of course we now know that it's not that it's just delayed price, right? Like we now have to take care of an environmental catastrophe.
Well, we certainly could store less copies of things and put it on less expensive techniques like tape. That's what we used to do. And then it would just take more processing time and more real time to retrieve the data. So we certainly can do it, but the market has totally gone in the other direction since SSDs and hard drives are so relatively cheap. It's just better to put all the data where you can get it right away.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely like to see a lot more articles and a lot more studies done on the best way to design data centers to be environmentally, as safe as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know disposing of all the e-waste is a huge problem, and we're going to have to face that one of these days.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this one, and we'll be back on Friday.